From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
It was called severe corporate greed, a scheme to cash in on the elderly. And in the middle of it, Bruce Rauner's company.
You've seen the false attacks from Pat Quinn's allies and the Springfield insiders, so you know they must be worried.
But there's no doubt that because of his media blitz, Mr. Rauner has good name identification. Just depends on the money. You know, I'd love to go on the Today Show several times an hour like the other guy.
It is very, very important that all of us band together with every fiber of our being to make sure that we stand against violence in neighborhoods and find positive ways for people, especially our young people, to contribute to society and to lead productive and safe lives.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is taxpayer walking around money. The governor who's really putting people first doesn't take tens of millions of their dollars for his own political slush fund.
That's Republican suburban state Senator Matt Murphy criticizing Governor Quinn this week after a pretty harsh audit came out regarding an anti-violence program that we heard Quinn announcing back in 2010. Before that, we heard an anti-Bruce Rauner attack ad paid for by unions, Bruce Rauner's response ad to that, and a comment from State Senator Kirk Dillard, one of the other Republican candidates, the Hinsdale Republican, kind of wishing he had the money that Rauner did. 2.5 weeks to the primary, organized labor paying for those anti-Bruce Rauner ads. The Quinn administration gets hit hard in a state audit. We'll talk about that and more on this week's State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, WUIS and Illinois Public Radio State House reporter Brian Mackey, and our guest Jamie Dunn, the State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Issues Magazine. Jamie, welcome back to the program.
Always glad to be here, Bill.
And for those tracking the politics, the unions were solid with their anti-Bruce Rauner campaign as they've intervened in that Republican race, or at least are trying to bruise him up a little bit. Brian Mackey, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, we heard for a long time how the unions were preparing this big negative ad campaign against Bruce Rauner, and we kept waiting for it and waiting for it. And then finally, within the last few weeks, some of these ads have started to go online. Rauner has wasted no time in putting his own responses on air, and he has the money to pay for it. He dropped, I think it was last week, another $500,000 into his campaign just this week. More than $1 million into his campaign. That brings his total self-funding level since the start of last year to more than $5 million. His overall campaign has raised more than $12 million, almost $13 million. And we're still a couple of weeks away from the primary. And his opponents just can't keep up. They can't even really compete in this very important arena of reaching voters, which is television advertising.
I did see one kind of interesting thing emerge this week, and if you can shed a little more light on it for us, the unions challenging Bruce Rauner by filing an ethics complaint against the candidate. Explain how that works and what would be the potential violation for an ethics violation for a candidate.
Yeah, there's a 6-page complaint. I'm holding it in front of me here, and you know it has the words procurement code, other kind of language that kind of makes people's eyes glaze over a little bit. But basically, the allegation is because Bruce Rauner's former company, GTCR, it's a big investment firm. He was the R, Rauner, in that company. They did business with the Teachers Retirement System of Illinois and invested money for them and still continue to have some kind of financial relationship. I believe they're still making money based on their investments they manage with them. And they say even though Rauner is no longer with the firm, that basically their allegation is that he's prohibited from making contributions to a political candidate, namely himself. Now, why they waited until, you know, 3 weeks before the primary election to file this complaint after he'd already spent $5 million on this is an interesting question. I'm not sure if somebody just kind of just thought of it or what the deal is there. I can't imagine it's likely that this is going to be resolved in time to really make a difference going into the primary, but it's yet another thing that's kind of out there in the effort from unions to try and stop Rauner.
It does get some news coverage, though.
No, it does, and we're talking about it right now.
Jamie, your thoughts on this particular filing and what you've observed in with these ads and responses?
Well, yeah, I mean, the real issue with these kind of union attacks on Rauner, I think some of the messaging is pretty spot on, but there has to be an alternative, and we're seeing all the other Republican candidates not having enough money to kind of put themselves out there as a viable alternative. So you can, you know, tear Rauner down, but unless someone has the money to say, hey, I'm the guy, I'm the alternative to this, I don't know that it's really going to gain traction with voters.
And the polls we've seen still have Mr. Rauner ahead by double digits, 20 points in some cases. So, I mean, all the other – I mean, Treasurer Dan Rutherford is really not been doing as much lately. Put a hold on future advertising, or I should say withdrew reservations that he had for future advertising, although I am still seeing some ads that he already bought. I had seen them this week airing, at least downstate. And he has really sunk in polling. But you have the other two, State Senators Kirk Dillard and Senator Bill Brady, who are both saying, you know, we're the one who could be the alternative. Neither of them really have the money to advertise, and they're just kind of hoping that the other guys get out of the way, and then maybe these ads continue to hurt Rauner and they can sneak in at the end.
And, Jamie, the strategy for Rauner much has been is just letting people know he's been endorsed by a lot of people, rank-and-file lawmakers and politicians across the state and a couple of education interest groups.
Dillard? Are you talking about Dillard on that?
Yeah. I meant Dillard. Sorry.
Yeah, and that does seem to be kind of what he's going for. He was endorsed by retired teachers this week, and you know, while some of those endorsements might be kind of coveted and the money and the people that can come with them, looking at again, I mean, it kind of comes back to the money with Rauner. I know we keep saying that over and over again, but we look at some estimates that were compiled this week at Rauner spending about, you know, $12 million on this campaign to Dillard spending about $1 million. I mean, it's just pretty staggering when you look at how much Rauner is spending and how little the other candidates are spending. So these union endorsements, you know, are going to get Dillard probably some bodies on the ground, people knocking on doors. But again, it's hard to see how it's going to be enough unless he can get some cash.
And the candidates this week also debated in a televised debate in the Chicago area. One of the things that came through in that, everybody clarified what stances they've taken, or at least what they've taken, or what catchphrases they've at least used in lieu of a stand. But one thing is Bruce Rauner kind of said that he will do things like the former governor of Indiana, Mitch Daniels. He'll use executive orders to take on the power of special interest inside the state. So in a sense, I guess this would be the Illinois version of a pen and a phone. Is this something that you can do in Illinois, Charlie Wheeler?
I don't think the governor has very much authority to use executive orders. He certainly can't enact law by executive order. Probably the most significant thing that the Constitution allows the governor to use in an executive order to do is to reorganize state agencies. For example, at one point we had separate departments for mental health, for alcoholism and substance abuse, and so on, and they got all combined into the Department of Human Services. But even in that instance, the process allows the legislature to reject that reorganization if a majority of lawmakers don't think it's a good idea. But it's not as though, as I say, Bruce Rauner can decide, okay, this is going to be a right-to-work state, and by executive order, I'm making it a right-to-work state. Or by executive order, I'm going to get rid of those union bosses and no more collective bargaining. I mean, I can't believe that he actually thinks that you can do major stuff with executive orders to change what he perceives as this this cancer of collective bargaining and union workers and their leaders being involved in government. It just doesn't work that way.
You know, and Charlie, you make great points on the substance of the policy matters here. And yet I think Mr. Rauner knows that among Republican voters, as you do, that Mitch Daniels is very popular. A lot of people wanted him to run for president, just like Scott Walker is very popular among Republican voters. And never mind that the governor of Indiana has more authority to do things with executive orders. And never mind that Scott Walker, when he did his union busting bill a few years ago, had a Republican legislature that he could work with. You know, it's just I think that Mr. Rauner knows that this is a politically popular thing to say, and it's certainly, you know, he's in a comfortable lead, and I guess you have to say something when you're not being as specific as you are on some of the policy issues, so this is what he's choosing to focus on.
Oh, no, you're absolutely correct, and I suppose I sound like a, what would you say, an idealistic curmudgeon or something, when I wish that the voters of Illinois would be better informed and the politicians would be have the courage to be more honest with them. Had that been the case over the years, we'd be much better off.
Now, in that, go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, just kind of as an explanatory side note, when he first started mentioning this, you know, Mitch Daniels' executive order, I was like, what? How did he do that? How was he able to, you know, cut collective bargaining rights through executive order in Indiana? Well, it was kind of a special case in that their collective bargaining rights were created by executive order in the first place because basically the Republican legislature would not pass them into law. So there was a governor that just created bargaining rights through executive order. So it's not like he was tinkering with an existing law or legislation, whereas in Illinois, you know, it would be changing the law through executive order, which he can't do. So, you know, it was really kind of a very case specific to Indiana and what was going on there that was able to happen.
State Senator Bill Brady, one of the other Republican candidates in the race, called Rauner naive for saying that. Was it naive, or was it what you guys have kind of alluded to, that it was just playing to the people?
I mean, I guess we'll know if we ever get a Governor Rauner and we see what he tries to do. I mean, it's certainly, you know, there is nothing precluding governors from making naive policy proposals. I might point to Governor Blagojevich's gross receipts tax idea, which was certainly outside the box. You know, governors can propose things, and you have to work, in Illinois at least, with a very democratic, very powerful legislature, or rather even legislative leaders. I mean, Mike Madigan is not going anywhere, barring any unforeseen surprises. Senate President John Cullerton is not going anywhere. And even a very conservative, very innovative business strategy type Republican governor would have to get over their very much alive and powerful bodies before he could pass these things into law.
Well, and you can ask the same thing about the way that Governor Pat Quinn uses the amendatory veto power. We see him, you know, perpetually making these amendatory vetoes that we all know aren't going anywhere. We have to assume he kind of realizes that, too. But is it idealistic? Is it cynical? Is it naive? I think the voters can be the judge on that. But,
you know, I heard somebody making a comment down here this week that, you know, if Bruce Rauner really just, you know, instead of spending all this money on his presidential or this gubernatorial campaign, Freudian flip there, sorry. Instead of spending all this money on his gubernatorial campaign, he could just buy a mansion in Springfield and hold a press conference every day, and he'd probably have just about as much effect as he would if he's elected governor.
Well, and another example of a governor trying to do things outside the legislature was when former Governor Blagojevich tried to expand health care. And he tried to do it by not executive order, but by rulemaking, which is a more traditional way of setting policy. And the legislature, through its Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, came back and said, no, you don't have the legislative authority to do that. You can go ahead and promulgate whatever rules you want, but they do not fall within what the legislature intended, so they're DOA. And as a matter of fact, that was one of the articles of impeachment against Blagojevich.
And one other note related to the Republican gubernatorial campaign, Crane Chicago Business did endorse Bruce Rauner. You're listening to State Week in Review. Just ahead, the Quinn administration gets nailed in a state audit.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
Our panel on State Week, Charlie Wheeler, Brian Mackey, and Jamie Dunn of Illinois Issues Magazine. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. The Auditor General was out with the word I think people use is scathing at times, and this was a scathing audit of a program from the Quinn administration, and Republicans used this audit to jump and make some political hay. Why don't you folks at the State House bring us up to speed on what this audit was about, what happened, and when?
I like that portmanteau, Bill, audit. We need to yes. Make that into our lingo. So getting back, this was something called the Neighborhood Recovery Initiative. It was put into place in August 2010. Governor Pat Quinn kind of went around some of the legislators and worked directly with Chicago aldermen. That's always a good place to give grant money. And what this audit says is that the NRI program, this Neighborhood Recovery Initiative, was, quote, hastily implemented. I'm reading just in the summary here some of the bold-faced terms. Hastily implemented. Not all the most violent Chicago communities were included in the program. Did not exercise due diligence. Failed to adequately implement financial control mechanisms. The list of things just goes on and on and on. This was a $55 million program. And what you saw this week is a lot of Republicans saying, well, what was happening in 2010 in the fall? Governor Pat Quinn was running for re-election, and he needed to shore up the base, and it was a very narrow win that he had.
One thing I've seen coming out of this from the Republicans that are criticizing it is they're trying to imply, it seems, that there were things criminal, or not at least just not denying that something was criminal, saying if there is criminal behavior, we should look into it. Do you think it's that far along?
I don't know that the audit, again, it is a very scathing audit, as you said, but I'm not sure that it crosses the line into criminal behavior at this point. We've definitely seen maybe not audits quite this bad, but audits where, computers are missing and things aren't accounted for and state contracts have been tweaked and that sort of thing before. Now, this is one of the most egregious ones that I have seen with all these things in it. But I'm not sure that it crosses the line with what we see in the audit. It doesn't mean that, that might not be something that is uncovered down the road, that there was some criminal collusion going on or that people were actually walking out the door with some of this money. But this audit doesn't actually indicate that yet.
It was kind of, I mean, there was a giddiness here. I think this thing among Republicans, this thing came out Wednesday morning. By that afternoon, they were having a press conference in the Capitol. And the first people to talk were to say, we need to refer this to the ethics, the executive inspector general for an ethics probe. And then a guy would say, I hope the U.S. attorneys might look into this. Maybe we'll have some political corruption. And then they just couldn't help themselves. One person asked about, do you think this rises to the level of impeachment? And one of the Republican senators said, boy, I think we'll have to explore that. We'll have to explore that. So, I mean, yeah, I, like Jamie said, is this something that would rise to the level of criminality? I don't know. But, I mean, from both a left and a right, on the right side, you certainly, this looks like a kind of a waste of government money. And on the left side, this is an anti-violence program that's not even helping the communities that it's supposed to be helping, the most violent parts of the city. I saw one line in there that said, instead of the most violent part of the city, it actually helped the 48th most violent part of the city in one case.
Yeah, the Hermosa neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, and that I found the most frustrating about this. I recently did a story on the violence in Chicago and, talking to folks who have lost kids and that are living in that say, we need programs, we need opportunities for our young people, we need bridges to employment. And then you see money just, kind of looks like going down the drain on something that was not executed well, whether that was for political reasons or not. It is pretty frustrating to see that happening.
And in my mind, it was interesting that this Neighborhood Recovery Initiative was money that was funneled through a group called the Illinois Violence Prevention Authority. And a little more than a year ago, the legislature voted to eliminate the Illinois Violence Prevention Authority and shift it into another Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority. So in other words, the legislature already had, I guess, considered that, hey, this thing isn't working right and we need to get other people in charge. And that,
as I
say, that predates this audit by more than a year.
And I talked to the folks that are running the program now, and it's a much smaller budget. We're looking at about $12 million, which is maybe a little telling that it's been trimmed back so much. And it seems like it's a lot more what you would expect from a program like this, getting young folks summer jobs, you know, in retail and that kind of thing, helping them build their resume, getting them mentoring. You know, it seems like it's sort of turned into what you would expect from a program like this. But then that does present a stark contrast to what was going on, you know, what this audit, the story that this audit is telling.
Well, and in my mind, as somebody who's watched this stuff for a long time and was a reporter at the Sun-Times for more than 20 years, anytime you decide we're going to involve aldermen in deciding who the worthy recipients for these grants are, who the community entities we want to come forward and handle this program, anytime you leave that decision up to aldermen, in my mind, that raises red flags.
Another issue this week out of the administration was the head of DCFS stepped down after 1 month on the job. Can you update us there?
Yeah, the Chicago Sun-Times and the WBEZ, which is a public radio station in Chicago, had been collaborating on an investigative series looking into an unusually high number of kids who were dying in the care of DCFS. And as they're doing this report, it turns out that the director of DCFS was very ill, and he ended up succumbing to cancer. And so this other person was put in there, a guy named Arthur Bishop. And as the Sun-Times and WBEZ kept investigating, they found that Mr. Bishop had a criminal conviction in his past, or I guess pleaded guilty to stealing money from clients of a social service agency where he worked. And then it comes out that he had an estranged daughter who he had not really had any contact with. And she sat down for an interview, I believe it was on Tuesday of this week. And in it, she said things like, you know, he kind of left me. I don't think he should be entrusted with the care of other people's kids. A day later, we learned that the director was resigning. It was a rather scathing resignation letter. He talked about political enemies and this being an election year, and he didn't, you know, want to be a part of that. So he stepped down, and that's that.
Yeah, he had come over as he was the director of the Department of Juvenile Justice before Quinn tapped him to take over DCFS. But he had worked in DCFS since the 90s before he went over to the Department of Juvenile Justice. A lot of the advocacy folks that I've talked to over the years seem to, you know, think fairly highly of him. He just won a Juvenile Justice Award a year or two ago. So I think some of this came as a bit of a surprise to a lot of people who maybe didn't know about some of these issues in his background.
Jamie, same-sex marriage was in the news after a ruling last week allowed Cook County to start issuing marriage licenses. Now we've seen that it's moved downstate and is being discussed in other counties.
Yeah, Champaign County decided to go ahead and start issuing marriage licenses as well. They said that some same-sex couples had inquired after the Cook County ruling, and the Cook County clerk decided to do that. And, you know, they said there was no lawsuit or anything to prompt it, but they decided that it would be best, you know, to base it off of the Cook County ruling to go ahead and start issuing licenses to avoid having some kind of lawsuit and going through the same process that Cook County had gone through. And this kind of opens the door, I guess, to other counties if they are interested in issuing licenses to same-sex couples. You know, one downstate county has looked at that Cook County ruling and said, hey, this gives us the authority to do it. I don't know if there's a lot of interest in other counties. I've heard, you know, that the suburban counties have said they're going to wait. So we'll have to see if this is going to be kind of a flood or if we're going to, you know, see lots and lots of counties jump on the bandwagon.
Any problems that you see, Charlie Wheeler, when a county just starting to issue these licenses, or is it so close that it will become a moot point?
I think it's so close to the time when this is going to be the law in place throughout the state that it really doesn't make any difference. And I find it interesting that the people who are opposed to same-sex marriage are calling out the Champaign County clerk and saying, you can't do that because it's really not effective yet. And I wonder if some of those people who are complaining about downstate county clerk saying, hey, why should we make these people wait, would be the same people who were complaining so vociferously when some downstate law enforcement people, state's attorneys, said, we're not going to prosecute people for violating concealed carry because concealed carry is coming to Illinois.
We're at the point in the show where we like to get notes from the field, and I'm going to send it right back to you, Charlie Wheeler, to start it.
Well, Senate President John Cullerton of Chicago once again is pushing for online gambling, and this comes at a time when the Illinois House has adopted, and the Senate has agreed to it, I understand, a revenue estimate that shows the available money to be spent next year is going to decline by more than $1 billion. And some of the people who are pushing for this online gambling say it could bring in as much as $500 million a year to the state.
Jamie Dunn, what's your note from the field?
Yeah, well, we've seen the numbers for people buying insurance under Obamacare maybe lag behind what officials had hoped. People are signing up for Medicaid under the Medicaid expansion at a really fast rate, faster than state officials expected. The estimate was that over 500,000 Illinoisans would sign up, and now it's looking like maybe 430,000 of those folks will sign up within this calendar year. So far, they think they have about 315,000 people that have signed up based on the applications that have come in. And the estimate at this point was maybe 200,000. So, you know, state officials are kind of surprised that people are really getting on board with signing up for Medicaid pretty quickly.
And I don't want to pin you here, but I'm going to. There is a March deadline, is there not?
Yes. Okay. To get coverage under the mandate, you have to get it by the end of the month. Otherwise, you could be open to having a penalty for not having coverage under the federal mandate. So either insurance or Medicaid if you're eligible. So if you don't have it, you might check it out.
Brian Mackey, note from the field.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of pundits and others begin to try and compare Chicago to Detroit. Of course, Detroit declared bankruptcy and was able to discharge a lot of its pension and other debts. And Chicago certainly has a lot of financial problems, including some drastically underfunded pension systems. But enter this week a report from Standard & Poor's rating agency. It's will Chicago suffer Detroit's fate? The answer is an emphatic no. This agency at least believes that Chicago can control its own financial fate, that it's not nearly as bad. So that is one talking point that if you hear somebody making it, will Chicago be the next Detroit? You can say probably not.
Thanks very much. That's our time for this week's edition of State Week. Thanks for our guest Jamie Dunn for stopping by. She's from Illinois Issues Magazine. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org, or if using a desktop or laptop, find it on iTunes by searching for State Week in Review. Production assistance for our program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.